This podcast is brought to you by the Specialty Produce Network.
Welcome to Conscious Living here at the Specialty Produce Network. We are so glad you're here to support your lifestyle with the fastest growing resource for conscious families. So sit back, relax, connect, and enjoy. I am Ashley Lee, and I am the founder of Center for Conscious Kids, and this is our Conscious Living Network podcast, and we are here at Specialty Produce Network, and I'd like to introduce everyone on the podcast today.
I am Travis Looney from Travis and Pete, the co-owner and co-founder of Tap Into with Travis and Pete on Facebook. And to the left of me is...
I am Pete Olson, also, well, the other half of Travis and Pete, and a member of Conscious Living Network and Center for Conscious Kids. And we have a very special guest with us today on the podcast, Miss Cassie Poindexter.
Hi.
Well, you can introduce yourself.
Oh, I am the customer service manager here at Specialty Produce, where the network is, and one of the producers. And these guys tricked me into being on a podcast today, so
Lies.
We're going to see how that goes.
Yes. We tricked you into talking about your parenting journey.
They did.
Yourself.
Yeah, they tricked me into talking about myself, so
yourself,
you know, you can get me to do that for an hour. Yeah.
So the name of our podcast is called Parenting a Conscious Child. And we wanted to start talking with Cassie about how she experiences her life with her child. Tell me a little bit about your family and how you live your life from day to day.
Well, I am the proud parent of a 4-year-old little girl named Remy, and I have maybe not so unique now in the world, but a bit of a unique situation where I am not with Remy's father anymore. He and I split custody 50-50. So our custody arrangement is actually, at this time, 1 week on, 1 week off. And we co-parent very well. So that changes whenever we need someone to help out in the situation of time off or other things. Or if we just find that Remy needs to be at one house more than the other. It used to be a half week on, half week off, and we switched it a few months ago to 1 week on, 1 week off when she started a Montessori school to make it a little bit more structured. She also has step-parents at each house, so he and I are both in long-term relationships. We've been in each for about 3 years. So she likes to tell me she has three moms. I'm one. Ashley, her stepmom, is the other, and then one of the moms at her old daycare, not one of the moms, one of the daughters at her old daycare is her third mom. And then she has two dads, which would be her dad, Dylan, and Andy, my forever boyfriend is what I call him, my FBF.
FBF.
That's great.
Yeah, I'm not really planning on getting married again, so boyfriend just doesn't sound like enough. So
man friend.
Yes, my man friend. My long-term man friend.
So tell me how in your everyday life with her nowadays when she's four, what would you define as conscious living or conscious parenting with her?
That's it's kind of an interesting question because I never heard that term before, being the producer on this podcast and interacting with you guys. But I do just try to make sure that any reaction that I'm having with her, any conversation that I'm having with her is outside of my own the way that I interpret things or think that things should be and the way that society thinks things should be, and then really just try to understand the situation from her point of view, from my point of view. And I have a lot of conversations with her, which I think is key to sort of understanding her and understanding situations that we're in. That doesn't mean I get it perfect, obviously. She's four, and four-year-olds are a little bit easier than three-year-olds, but she's very independent. She has her own thoughts and feelings. And so we do have temper tantrums and interactions that are not at the level that I would want them to be all the time. But I just try to make sure that when I interact with her, I'm explaining situations, making sure she understands situations and how I feel and how she feels so that we can communicate on a better level. That's probably my most important thing. I have probably too many conversations with her. I'm explaining stuff to her all the time. She'll use a word and I'll be like, do you know what that means? And she'll be like, yeah, I know what that means. So I'll ask her what it means and she doesn't. So I always explain to her what things are and really like define everything. Like, you know, I would be like, do you know what a Mevo is? And she'd be like, yeah, I know what that is. I'd be like, no, you don't. It's a camera. Like, you know, we would like have conversations about everything. I use words that she doesn't understand so that I can give her more vocabulary to explain who she is and how she feels in situations.
That's awesome because it feels like that. So we've got here in the studio, we've got Ashley Lee, who has an 8-year-old daughter. And then we have, you know, Cassie, who has
four.
4-year-old. And, you know, in between the two of y'all are people who don't have kids at all. So
we've been parented ourselves.
Yeah. So I guess that is it's like feels. You're both coming into it as like, so how, I guess for you, Ashley, like when was it whenever you heard conscious children, like being a conscious parent? Because she's, you know, she's over here saying that she heard it first from us.
Yeah.
You've been in this field for a while now.
Yes.
So when was it that you were able to actually take that consciousness and apply it to the parenting of your child?
Well, I think that was an interesting question because we were looking at some of the ways in which we would speak and share today. And I find it really fascinating because I don't think I used the word conscious when I was young as well. And I mean, when my daughter was young and just born or when I was pregnant with her, I really had an innate feeling from maybe a spiritual standpoint that when I was pregnant with her 19 years ago, that she was a little person that me and my husband decided to create and bring into the world and support and give resources to. And so what we did was I realized, though, when we conceived her and when she was developing inside, I realized she wasn't mine. It wasn't an ownership. It was we decided collectively to create this little person to bring forward into the world, to give her resources, to give her support, to give her love, to give her time, to give her energy, to help her become the person she'd like to be coming forward and how she would like to relate to the world. And I
the one thing that you said that actually just threw me for a loop was that whenever she was inside of you, you realized that there was no ownership, she is not yours. Like, that is a huge aha moment that I hope that other people that are listening to this take away, is that that's how you chose to. I mean, that's not how everybody does, but like, that's how you chose to raise them as an independent person.
What's amazing is when she came out and when she was young and even up to present day, that kind of perspective from an adult, what happened was there was a part of her, though, that felt like maybe I should own her and maybe I should be connected to her in such a way that she belongs to me and I belong to her. So I always had imparted the idea that she always belongs. There's never a not belonging. She's always going to be my child. I'm always going to be her mom. So that those relationships aren't changed or severed in any way, but that I didn't own. So if she acted bad, for example, I didn't have to own that I was a bad mom. I just got to realize that something was happening in her behavior or in something that was happening in her life that prompted that bad behavior. And so a need didn't get met. And I knew that I needed to meet that need in a different way or help restructure her idea of the way that she needed to get her needs met. Does that make sense?
No, that definitely makes sense. I know that is something that is evolving on a daily basis when you have a child. And even, you know, I have a 4-year-old, you have an 18-year-old. That evolution really doesn't change. You're still her mother. You're her mother forever. But you have to allow your child to grow and go through those processes. And then you as a parent, I think one of the biggest things that I've been noticing is that you have to be able to see those moments, see that those growth patterns in your child and embrace them and then let them go. Yeah. I think someone gave me a piece of advice that resonated with me, which was, parents really spend a lot of time trying to remember the first thing, like the first time that they walk, the first word that they that they say. And you kind of always remember those things, those first big moments. But the thing that you tend to miss as a parent is the last moment, like the last time that your child breastfed, the last time that your child fell asleep on your lap, the last time that your child needed you to lay in bed with them. Like right now, Remy needs us to be in bed with her until she falls asleep. And sometimes you're just like, oh, this is so inconvenient. I have so much that I need to do. You know, I try to get to a yoga class right after she falls asleep, all this stuff. But at the same time, there's going to be a day when she doesn't want me in her bed with her anymore. When she falls asleep on her own, just that day when she goes, I'm fine, mommy, you know, you can leave. And as a parent, it's important to see those moments and love those moments, but then also allow your child the space that they need to move on from that and not make them feel like they are required to feel guilty as a child, that as your child, that they don't need you anymore. I think a lot of parents really, they develop who they are around who their child is. And so when the child changes, they can't let their child move on and grow up in the way that they need to and let their relationship evolve.
This is a very powerful conversation. There's a lot of new perspective for me, kind of as Travis mentioned earlier. So that last statement that you made about the child not feeling guilty for no longer needing the parent in the same way, and then the parent remembering that moment, treasuring that time that once was. So how do you all as parents raise your own consciousness to then raise your child's consciousness? Like, what's the parents' homework in raising this, or whatever we're going to call it, so that, I mean, some children just have an ability to be conscious, to be more sensitive with their, be more in tune with themselves and the world without a parent. But what does that look like on the parent's end?
I think you're exactly right. I mean, when I was raising my child, she was born with a lot of allergies and had a lot of colic. So there was a lot of medical need. And she was having a lot of intolerances to different types of foods and formula, and breastfeeding was a challenge and all those different kinds of things. And for lots of different, even medical reasons, brain integration reasons, sensory integration reasons. And so with that, I think I functioned as a nurse, as a pediatric critical care nurse, from a perspective of, well, we have to work on the body. We have to work on getting food in. We have to work on creating a non-failure thrive situation. We have to maybe eat, you know, in the daytime and not at night. She drank an ounce and a half every hour and a half until 3 years old.
Wow.
That's how significant it was. And so there was a lot of parents are dealing with different types of kids that have issues or situations that are challenging. From the, I guess, mainstream child who, you know, has a bottle, has the breast, eats well, you know, adapts and has those adaptations. My child had a little bit of more difficulty at adapting to the world and the changes within it. So how did you, you know, how did I maintain that? I don't know. I think in some areas when she was an infant and little, I worked a lot in fear. I worked a lot around the medical model, and I think that I was being less conscious than trying to support her growth and development, and I wanted to be even better with that. I mean, I went to other healthcare professionals to support me in her growth and development, and I said, I really just want her to grow up being happy, healthy, and well-adjusted, and not well-adjusted like to go to Harvard, but well-adjusted to like be herself and relate to herself, others, and then everything in her life in a way that she felt comfortable, happy, belonging, supported, loved, and that she could then return those ideas, those feelings back to the world too and radiate that out from her internal self. So I think I had all these ideas, but you're right, I never called it conscious living. I never called it those things. I think we maybe a long time ago, maybe several hundred years ago, and even before that, before we got into the Industrial Revolutionary time, like the cooperative school talked about how we designed schools and all those different things, I think we lost touch with raising children to be a part of this society rather than they're the central dogma, they're the central focal point of the family, and then cater around them and then grow them up and then undo all of that. central, central. You know, what would you call spoiling? I don't know, or different aspects.
Hovering,
yeah, hovering.
Helicopter parent. So what? Whenever you said you told that person, you were like, "I just want my child to grow up happy and healthy." What was something that they said to you? Like, did they give you resources? Did they give
No, they said nothing was wrong, and she was perfectly typical, and everything was fine. And I said, "Yeah, you're typical. She's typical because I'm feeding her every hour and a half, all throughout the day." So when we put her in the preschool so I could go work in the intensive care unit from time to time, that we would pick her up after 8 hours and she had only 4 ounces of food and she was 10 months old, or formula. She was only 10 months old. And I said, you know, where are we going to make up the food that has to be made up, that fluid volume and the nutrients? So with that, we fed her all night long for years and it got better. She started drinking and eating normally and typically, but it was a challenge. She had sensory motor problems in and around her mouth, chewing and swallowing. You would never guess that now. She's doing extremely well, and she's very happy and healthy and well-adjusted.
And gorgeous.
So that intention of putting that forward actually really did get fulfilled, and that was really positive. So I think also us being, as parents, being conscious about what it is we would like to fulfill for our child. Where would we like to see them? Not necessarily living in the future, but that helping pave that road of the future. What does that look like? And what are those pavers like? What do you, you know, so for a four-year-old, what do you put down
yeah.
for that future five-year-old?
Yeah, for sure. My experience is, every parent's experience is different. So mine is different, and I am just starting out, you know, she's only at 4 years old.
Yeah.
I think the way that I make sure that I'm raising a conscious child, I guess is the term I'd be using now, is that I am creating a consciousness within myself. So I have been on a journey of my own for the last 4 years as a parent, and learning so much more about myself now that I am a parent of not just a child, but a girl, and then not just a girl, but a girl who is very feminine. And girly is the term that we would use, and I used to use that word with a kind of snicker to it. But I do have a girl who embraces her girliness on a level that I never did, which is a new learning experience for me, too, to make sure that I'm allowing her the space to be who she is and to not try to push sports on her and push, you know, I want to open her up and expose her to everything, but I don't want to make her into what I want her to be or what I was. I want to give her the space to discover who she is and what she likes. And maybe it is that she skateboards with a tutu. You know, maybe that's who she is, which
that
is amazing,
awesome.
Right? She actually is very into skateboarding. She just is also very clumsy, so we haven't gone there yet.
I feel her pain.
But one of the things that I've spent time on very consciously is figuring out who I am and giving myself space to be that person. I have a tendency to lose myself in a lot of things. So I kind of am a workaholic. I am here all the time, which I love my job. It's great. But sometimes I will lose myself in that space, or sometimes I throw myself into a relationship and I lose myself into those relationships and I don't take time to figure out who I am and give myself space. And even as a mother, I am – a lot of mothers would think that I am crazy for saying this, but I am very lucky that I do not have my child all of the time, because I have to take the time to be me and do my own thing, because I only have her half of the time. And at first that felt like a terrible thing that I was giving up, and I felt guilty all the time for not having her there all the time. And then I went through a phase where I felt guilty that I no longer felt guilty that I didn't have her there all the time, until I finally just let go of all of that and realized that by me taking time for myself and figuring out who I am going to create the person that I always thought I was going to be but was never actively being. And that person was going to be someone who could show Remy how to not just be my child. That's not all that she is. I am not just her mother. And she is not just my child. She is a separate person from me. And if I am not actively being my own person, then how can I teach her to actively be her own person? And not
– boom. Drop the mic. Ding.
You know, to be okay if she doesn't miss me all the time, or to be okay if I don't miss her all the time, or to make her own choices and her own decisions and – embrace things that she loves and then also give up things that she might not. Like, I played soccer. I played soccer for 14 years. Of course I want her to play soccer. Of course, growing up, I always thought I was going to coach my child's soccer team. But I want to give her the power to tell me no if she doesn't want to do that. I don't want to be a parent that dictates what my child does. But the only way I can really do that is to be my own person and show her that I make my own decisions too, absolutely, that I do what I want to do. You know, the when I don't have her and I that I am active in who I am, and then I share that with her when I get her back. You know, from her father, I always tell her everything that I did when she wasn't there so that she knows that I am my own person with my own thoughts and my own feelings and my own hobbies that aren't necessarily centered around her. And then when I have her, she is my main focus. And, you know, it is about her, but it's not about her for every single day of my life.
Right.
And so what you're describing, too, is you really are. I know you all did a podcast the other day on judgments. But what you're talking about is that you're allowing her to have her judgments, talk about them, and then reframe them in such a way that she can create what she wants and ask for and get her needs met as well.
Yeah, that's what we're working on. She's four, so her vocabulary and her way of framing things isn't necessarily where it needs to be, but I'm actively having conversations with her so that when she does reach that point, she can have them back with me.
Yeah, and when you find that she gets her needs met, what behaviors do you see from her?
Well, she's so funny and active, and I see a confidence building in her. You know, the last year she's been in a Montessori school, and I've seen her confidence level go up so much in a structure where she gets to choose. Mm-hmm. You know, the thing about Montessori is that they get to sort of choose the activities that they're going to participate in. It's not as structured. It's structured, yes, but not in a dictated way where you're not asking. What was the one that you guys use? You're not asking a fish to climb a tree.
Yeah.
You know, you're letting her kind of decide what she likes. And since then, her confidence level has really raised. And so I've noticed that at, you know, both of our houses, her father and I, we talk all the time about how she's doing. Have noticed her being a little bit more confident in asking what she wants and, you know, her needs. And then also confident enough to sort of play on her own and make her own decisions about what she's going to do when she's at our houses, so we don't constantly have to be involved in that.
Yeah, and so as she gets her needs met, so you notice confidence rising. But what other areas could you have could you notice about how she's doing by getting her needs met? Does she have more periods of calmness?
Well, she's always been, honestly, a really, really easy child. I got really lucky. I think that she, if you believe in old souls and all of that, as she is a much older soul than I am. So she sort of, I feel like she understands the world in a way that I don't even understand it yet. I've learned a lot more from her at this point than I think she has from me. And that's going to keep going. So she really doesn't have a lot of moments where she is out of control. Those moments are really, really small. What I've noticed is that within her brain growth as a four-year-old is that she feels more confident to explain herself than she used to be. So we can have a lot more conversations where I can remove her from a situation if she is just being out of control and then come back later and ask her why this happened, how she feels, how it made me feel, and have a conversation around that. So I think that might be one of them. She's four.
And
it doesn't always go that way, right, but that's the plan.
One of the things that I had noticed between you talking about 3 years of a certain way of feeding your child, small doses of food, compared to what the norm was, the typical, and then also like figuring out navigating this world of co-parenting, is that you released what it's supposed to look like and you just embrace what that moment brought you. And that is how we here at Center for Conscious Kids and Conscious Living Network define consciousness at the basic level as the moment that's right in front of us. Mm-hmm. And so you talk about releasing the judgment. I mean, judgments are important. They give us information, but releasing that so that where I am in this moment, wherever Remy is in her conversational skills, is where she's supposed to be right now, like releasing where a four-year-old's supposed to be, releasing that you don't miss her like you used to, or that you feel guilty because she's not around you. Like, and then eventually it's just like, then you can be yourselves. Mm-hmm. And then 18 years later, you have a kid who's making her own decisions on where she wants to go to school, and maybe she had one choice and she got another choice, but like she's navigating that. And at 4 years old, Remy is navigating that she can ask for what she wants and not feel guilty about it. And it makes me want to go back and be a 4-year-old and 18-year-old and like reevaluate. I don't know if I could parent myself, but reevaluate my own needs and wants and not feel guilty or judged
or blamed
for where I'm supposed to be,
you know, or blame that, you know, you have a need. I mean, a lot of us might have been raised in a situation where it wasn't okay to express a need. It wasn't okay to be needy. It wasn't sit down, eat your dinner, go to bed, do your homework. This is what you're supposed to do. You know, you weren't supposed to have other situations arise, quite possibly. So that's what we're talking about, right? About raising a conscious child and giving them the idea. I mean, for my child had a lot of – I talked about it earlier about – she wanted to really hang with us. She wanted to be with us. She didn't want to leave. She didn't want anybody to leave. And I realized if she had her way, she would want to me to homeschool her. And I said, no, actually, we need to help you go out and have friends and to go and be social and be part of a bigger community. And so I knew that was really important. But it was really funny. At age 2 or 3, she didn't even want to go outside 18 years ago and play. And I said, no, go please play in the street so you can learn about cars. And I didn't mean that literally, but what it was
don't play in traffic.
I put her in front of the car, though, and I had my husband get in the car. And I said, do you see Daddy in the car? And she said, no. And I said, so Daddy does not see you. She goes, oh. So then I don't know whether she got more scared to go play in the street. She didn't go play in the street very much. But nonetheless is bringing in those awarenesses. So that's really what we're talking about is what is it raising a conscious child? Is raising an aware child. And a child that can know that they have thoughts, they have feelings, they have emotions, they have needs, and that they get to have a voice in having those feelings or thoughts. And I used to call it, when my daughter was young, self-advocacy. So I knew that she would do really well in the world when she could advocate for herself. And a lot of times, and I think we both are raising single children, and I think in a single children environment too, they get a lot of their needs met without a lot of conversation because you know them, they're the focal point of the family, all of those sorts of things. So they don't know how to always speak up. It sounds like your child is doing a great job of it.
Well, we're trying.
Which is fantastic.
Yeah, actually, this year, now that she's 4, I feel like now is the time when I need to start instilling that a little bit more. You know, when they're younger, every moment of a child's life is different. And when they're a baby, they should be the main focus. They should be getting their needs met at all times. Like when they cry, you need to figure out why they're crying and you need to fix it. But now she's at an age where she needs to start understanding that she's not always the center focal point of everything that's happening in the room at that time. And that's not at all a mean thing to do to your child. Right. I think that it's very important that they learn that they cannot interrupt a conversation that you're having with somebody else. And it doesn't even have to be that they can't interrupt the conversation because they're a child and you're an adult. That's not ever the boundary that I'm trying to make. It's more that as a human, you can't interrupt the conversation that's happening with somebody else unless the like house is burning down, you know, right. or you are not always the one that gets to control what is on the television. You are not always the one that gets to control what we eat for dinner. Right. You are in control of yourself. Yeah, yeah, you have an opinion and you get to have a choice and you get to make those decisions sometimes, but you do not get to make those decisions all the time. Right. And so that's a boundary that I'm working on because she is my only child and I do only have her half the time. So I'm always hinging between this idea of, yeah, I mean, everything should be about her all the time when I have her because it's only 1 week, you know, every other week. But then on the other side, it's like that isn't reality outside of this house. That's not reality outside in the real world. It isn't all about her. So we definitely are active in like is this a, when she comes to me with a situation, you know, to tattle on another kid at the park or something that she can't do on her own, I'm always like, is this a situation that you can handle on your own? You know, why don't you try to go back and have a conversation and see if you can fix it on your own? And if you guys can't, then come back to me and then I will help. Because as a parent, you're always just, it's almost like a Pavlovian response. Like sometimes I'll be walking through the house and I will have handed Remy her lunchbox to carry. And then 30 seconds later, I'm carrying her lunchbox. I don't even know how I got the lunchbox back in my hand. It's just a response of if your child needs you, you do it.
Yeah.
But there has to be a line that's drawn where they are also doing things on their own. And I was lucky.
So you're parenting a conscious child unconsciously, it sounds like.
And like, I'm like, how did this happen? Well, we get out of the car and I'll be handing her something to carry. And then I'll hand her something else to carry. And then I'll end up with the first thing back. And I'll be like, no, this is not how this works.
So that brings us to the next point of our conversation was you move into the unconscious part of parenting, which is where the child needs their needs met, basically 24/7. And so you're noticing it about four, and it'd be interesting to hear when you noticed it with your child, Ashley, about when is that transition point for turning over the consciousness to the child?
I don't think it's a single milestone. I think it's all throughout their life.
Yeah, taking the focal point off of the child as the center of attention and saying, okay, now it's time for you to go entertain yourself.
Yeah.
How does that process working for you right now and for you, Ashley, before?
Oh, gosh. I think four was about the age, sometimes five. It depends on where they are socially and emotionally, kind of on how they relate to themselves and then other people. My child had some speech delay, so she had trouble expressing her needs vocally with words. And so that was a little bit harder, but I used lots of different modalities to support her. But it was funny because I got some colored crayons and I put them in the shower and she loved to play in the shower. It was her cathartic moments as a little kid playing Barbies on the bottom of the shower. Anyway, I took crayons and I wrote words like family, and I wrote harmony, and I wrote part of, and I wrote different things. And she says, Mama, what's that say? And I said, it says family. She said, oh. And I said, it's harmony. And so I made different words on the little tiles to spell it out for her, to have her really embody that kind of – I didn't know I was doing it energetically back then, but to embody those thought processes while she was calming and going to peace and going into a sense of harmony with herself so that she could start to process these ideas, to help her recognize that she is part of a collective – that would be a little collective like the three of us, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or a larger collective like in a classroom setting and different things so that everyone can get their needs met and talk about it too. But it was more challenging with a child that was a little bit speech delayed in being able to converse in a way and get her needs met. So that was kind of my story. Yeah. But it's around four or five for that pivotal mm-hmm. moment of moving them out of a central – everyone has to take care of me to, oh, I can start doing things on my own.
Yeah, and then I think it's an ongoing process is what I assume. I don't know if my parents did it consciously or if it just happened, but I was raised in a way where I was very independent, you know, where not to where my parents weren't around. My parents were amazing. They were always there. But I also was empowered to do things on my own, like – my own laundry. I think I started doing my own laundry literally as soon as I could reach the buttons from a stool. So my boyfriend, he always jokes around about, I'm always like, Remy's gonna start doing laundry soon. You know, and he's like, what? She's four. It's like, as soon as she can reach those buttons, like she's doing her own laundry. Right now she can take it and put it in the dryer. So we're gonna, you know, go from there. It's just that I don't wanna ever be her maid. You know, she is a person that needs to take care of herself. So I think that sort of thing evolves as their brain evolves and they grow up. Right now, I can tell her that she can try to actively fix little squabbles that happen on the playground. You know, and that is going to develop too when she's larger. She's going to have to make real interpersonal decisions with her friends and at school and in all kinds of situations that I'm not going to be there for. And I don't honestly want to be there for. I want her to be able to feel empowered and confident enough to make those decisions and know that what she makes is right and that she's supported in those decisions.
I love what you said about, like, you know, if time to teach Remy how to do laundry. I mean, some people will be like, oh my gosh, he's only four, you know, what are you doing? But I'm sure that my mom would have been very happy to have taught me how to do laundry at four instead of me trying to teach myself after the fact that I put all the clothes in there and then bleach all over it. And, you know, she was like, she pulled out the laundry and there was bleach spots everywhere. And I'm like, I did the laundry, you know? But like, to show your child how to do something, not expecting them to do it over and over and over again, but at least giving them those tools so that, you know, to practice and to be able to do it if they choose to want to do that. I think it's pretty brilliant.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was sitting here thinking, you were talking about crayons in the bathtub, and Harold and the Purple Crayon popped up, which is one of my favorite books growing up, and where he literally learns how to draw his own world. And that's, for me, I work in the visual realm of understanding things. And so being able to create my world with whatever's in my hand, which is kind of how I'm going about it now, detaching from what I thought I knew and from what the expectations of others were, it's funny how I'm learning all this in my early 30s, and the 4-year-old and the 18-year-old are like, and it's just where we are. I'm releasing the judgment on myself.
Never
with
too
that.
Old to learn, though.
You're never too, but it's just like the pattern of, I grew up in a household where my thoughts were essentially taken care of for me. Activities and toys and opportunities were put in front of me, but I wasn't the one choosing them. They were what my parents thought were best for me, or what thought they were interested in it, so maybe I would be interested in it. And so, and again, releasing judgment on, they were doing the best they could with what they knew. And we live in a world now that's more conscious on an individual level of, you know, the age ranges of parents. And it, I don't know, it's just, it makes me want to go back. But then the conscious part of this part is like, it doesn't matter where I am in my life, whether I'm 4, 18, 30, 50, 70, whatever. It's like the conscious is now. And so the fact that I can be conscious now in my decisions is beautiful. And I'm learning, like, I'm going to go back and listen to this podcast, and, like, the things that you have said, Cassie and Ashley, about how you parented in different ways, but in the moment with each child's needs, I don't know. It really hit me. My brain is growing today.
I think that is the most key point of this conversation that we're having, is that no parenting experience is the same. No child is the same. No way that they develop is the same. So you can't put the same things in front of each child and expect if they're going to choose that they choose the same thing.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how parents used to parent, or where our society used to be, in that everyone fit into the same cookie cutter mold, you know, and that's not how children are. And you do them a disservice of not allowing them to figure out who they are. And you do yourself a disservice, because watching them embrace who they are and develop that person is just like, it's like Christmas every single day to see the new things that they've learned and what they're embracing and what they're excited about and what they love. And, you know, that changes from day to day. And if you are not conscious in the moment as a parent, you miss it. And you are looking at everything that you thought it was supposed to be, everything that you expected them to be and where your life was going to go, you miss what is happening right then.
And you kept carrying the lunchbox.
Well, I'm probably going to be doing that for a while.
Hey, I love the honesty.
It is. It's amazing. It is amazing to see my 18-year-old, who is in senior year in high school, and just unfolding her own place in the four areas that we talk about growth and development, not only just physical, but mental, emotional, and spiritual. And even spiritual, she's picked a church that she wants to go to with her friends. And I said, great, so what are they teaching you? What would you like to know? Is there any questions that you have about that? I teach her some other ideas, too, about noticing where her consciousness is, where shadow beliefs are. I've introduced her to those kinds of concepts, and she really, really loves it. She didn't realize that a lot of our judgments and a lot of our expectations, our negative expectations of ourselves, are states of victimhood and states of shadow and states of things we wouldn't like to have. And how can she turn those around and switch those around? So she's studying very different books and different activities that are helping her get in touch with her, as the kids call it, their inside self, her enlightened self, her soul self, but also doing emotional development in the way that she's also helping others and her friends and boyfriends and girlfriends and all kinds of different people in school and in her community of what she's created. And it's really interesting because I think as parents, we spend a whole lot of time in the mental and emotional realm, cognitively getting them scholastically ready and physically okay, you know, physically healthy, nutritionally healthy, and exercising and doing all these things. But sometimes we forget, too, that there's these other aspects of our growth and development, too, that create this person as a whole person and feeling whole and then belonging in society in the sense that they feel that they're part of it rather than just that single child getting all their needs met, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think a really key part of that is that you also do that work on yourself.
Yeah.
So if you are doing that work on yourself, then you can then do that work on your child. I think that that might be the biggest change that we've made in being conscious parents and conscious people and raising conscious children is that we finally realize that unless we're taking care of ourselves, we can't properly take care of and develop a child that can, you know, be in our society if we aren't doing that for ourselves.
So well said.
So one could say that the parent has to finish raising itself first before it can start raising its child.
Yeah. Or it kind of happens at the same time.
Yeah, it's like building the plane while flying it.
Yeah.
You can't put the hold on and be like, can you just sit over there for a couple of years while mommy fixes herself?
Well, I think that I'm sure that every mom would agree with me, but the changes in yourself as a mom are so profound when it happens on a level that you don't ever expect. Like,
yeah.
I remember thinking, like, there is, it's like my heart now exists on the outside of my body with my child, you know, and the changes within you and the way that you emotionally change as a woman are amazing and scary and hard. And then trying to get yourself back to who you were and to exist as yourself when that your heart does now exist outside of your body is something that is ongoing. So I think that parents need to give themselves some leeway to forgive themselves for making mistakes and to let go of judgments and to let go of ideas of what they're supposed to be and how they're supposed to be. And once they do that, then they aren't going to hold those judgments and those expectations over their child either. I think a lot of the times those expectations and judgments are there because they are there within ourselves.
It's really true. Mm-hmm. So you bring up a very difficult situation in the sense that you, at a very young age for your child, had separated. And then you all brought in different, if you could call them spouses or...
Yeah.
But brought those elements in and had gone through that process of knowing. So how did you let go of your attachments to that outcome that you thought it was supposed to be this way raising her and now it's this way? Because it looks like what you all have created is beautiful.
Well,
and really expressive in lots of fantastic ways that may not have even... You know, it's amazing to have two sets of parents all at the same time.
Yeah, honestly, I don't think that my ex's name is Dylan, Remy's dad's name is Dylan, and I don't think that we would have parented this way if we were together. It took a lot to get to this point. It took a lot of screaming and a lot of crying and a lot of, you know, punching walls and yelling at the top of mountains to get myself to a point where I could let go of what I thought our future was going to be. And I think it was a realization of just everything that I thought our future was going to be was never what it actually was in the moment. You know, I spent a lot of my relationship and my marriage focusing on my ideas of what our relationship was going to be. And that was honestly the hardest thing to let go of. If I focused on the moment, it was really easy to let go of the marriage that I had at that time. It was easy to let go of the relationship that had, you know, been developed over time at that time. But it was really hard to let go of my expectations of what our life was going to be. And once I was able to do that, then I was really able to embrace where our life was going to go and what we could do as parents when we weren't together. Honestly, I say now that Remy's going to get the best version of her parents. And when we were together, it would have been a lot of resentment. There would have been a lot of unbalance within who we were. We wouldn't have known who we were. We were very young when we got together, and we weren't really that young when we had Remy. We were 26, but he and I grew up together, and we were young when we got together and didn't really allow ourselves the space to figure out who we were while we were together. And some people can do that in a relationship. I'm not saying that you can't, but we couldn't. We had too many fears of leaving the other person behind, too many fears of not knowing if our spouse was going to like the person that we were when we changed. And even when we tried to grow within our relationships, we fought against ourselves to do it. And once we split up, he and I both had exponential growth in the kind of people that we are and figuring out who we are. And that co-parenting relationship is the best that it could ever have been. We are constantly in contact about Remy. And also, it was what we really did, and what not every parent does when they get in a divorce and everyone is different, is that Remy was always at the forefront of our conversations when we were splitting up. Everything that we did was to make sure that the situation was better for her and that she would feel loved and supported in every way that we could. So there was never a moment when we used her as a weapon or as a tool to get what we wanted. We did everything amicably. We did everything cohesively so that we really made sure that Remy had the best outcome. And then that, you know, over time has developed into four parents, and that relationship has also developed. You know, Dylan and I always had a good relationship, and then his girlfriend Ashley and I, we actually didn't for a while, because who really has a good relationship with their new, you know, ex-husband's girlfriend? But they actually split up for a short period of time, and in that time, Ashley and I became really close friends because she was so important to Remy that I wanted her to still be in Remy's life. And once Dylan and Ashley came back together and started their relationship again, Ashley and I have stayed friends. We're actually yoga partners. You know, so we, the four of us try to make decisions together and make sure that Remy is always at the forefront of that. And it just made more sense for Dylan and I to be friends anyway. We've known each other since we were 12 years old. So, you know, we were friends long before we were husband and wife.
Wow.
That was beautiful. It takes a village, and literally you've created a village where you've allowed the village to come in.
Yeah, definitely.
That was one of the thoughts I had hearing you both speak about your own experiences with raising a child, is that how do you also let go of how the other parent is supposed to interact with that child? And, you know, I hear a lot of parents arguing, or hear a lot of stories about how the child's supposed to be raised, where there's two complete individuals then trying to raise a third individual. And so there's got to be some detachment from parent to parent in that raising.
Definitely. I think that relationship is evolving quite regularly as well. And I'm sure that your situation is a little bit different than mine because you're in the same household. And I feel like even in the same house, it's even harder to bridge those gaps between how you guys feel you should be. But I honestly think that our difficulties as co-parents and how we want to raise our child is going to happen when Remy is a little bit older, when she reaches her teenage years, when her preteen years and, you know, all of what it is to be a 13-year-old girl gets brought into the situation. I think that's when we might have some battles. But really, we communicate very openly and we listen very actively to each other in conversations so that we're not trying to make the other parent the way that we want. We have conversations about what the options are and then decide what is the best outcome for everybody.
And it sounds like you trust the other three parents in this relationship, that you trust who they are as people to bring their best self to that relationship with Remy.
Yeah, I definitely trust them, and I need them is probably the best part. Is like, I am going to need them to help me raise Remy for the rest of her life. So it is important that those relationships are cohesive.
Beautiful. And it's really true. I mean, you're exactly right. When a husband and wife are there for, we'll be reaching our 22nd anniversary, and you do lose track of time, and you do have less sophisticated conversations in relationships that have gone on years and years and years, because it's like that train that just went by. right? It's like it's this train that just keeps going, and sometimes you lose context of conversation. But it sounds like you all have been in constant conversation about what are we doing this week and what are we doing next week and how is that doing and then what was Remy experiencing and all of those. Whereas I'm very sure we've been a little bit asleep in our relationship of co-parenting from time to time because it got easy. It was just in a flow. It's just happening day after day after day.
And got comfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it happens.
Yeah, it really does. And so, you know, it was very beautiful, your description of how you really do co-parent and really explaining to our listeners that sometimes divorce doesn't have to be a bad thing.
That was the best thing that ever happened to me. Thanks, Dylan.
Love you, man.
Yeah, it created that space. We talk about like...
Sorry, not sorry.
As I look at, like, I'm looking at my own story right now and writing it out and creating a story that I want, letting go of things that... judgment to myself. As I grow, it's from that story that I write, I have to take space from that and then come back to it. And to kind of refresh my eyes.
The browser.
The browser. Yeah. It's a good description. So it's like that was eminent in your story of that your refresh button was started in the form of divorce and then it continues in the form of vacations. That we talked about, you go into another country, leaving your daughter behind.
Oh, yeah. We didn't actually touch on that in the podcast. I think this whole interview started with me saying that I'm going to Japan next week without my daughter and how much she wants to go and how I finally just had to explain to her that, you know, mommy gets to go on this vacation. We will go on a vacation too, but I, you know, get time that is kind of my own. And that's important. And it's important for her. It will ultimately help her that she doesn't get to go on this vacation with me.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about, how it's sometimes important to learn that lesson of disappointment. And it's, you know, it's not going to be something that's disappointing for a long-lasting time. It was like you just said, we'll go on a vacation later. She needs to see her mom being able to do her own thing so that she knows that it's a choice that she has to make whenever she gets older, that it's okay to do your own thing. You got to take care of yourself. Or you can take care of somebody else. Like the thing we always say, put on your oxygen mask first before you put on the oxygen mask next to the person. That's brilliant.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. And I'm spending time embracing who I am and having that opportunity so that she can see it. She can see me be the woman that I always wanted to be so that she can be that kind of woman too. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't be just her mother and expect her to understand how to be more than just my child.
Well, there's like a reverse here too. What I did with my child is around age 11, we are from Hawaii. We grew up in Hawaii. My daughter was born in Hawaii and we're in San Diego now. And Hawaiian Air came in and what they did was they flew direct from San Diego to Honolulu. And so what we did was before it got really serious about the airplane rides and all that with kids. But at age 11, we got her a passport very early. But at age 11, we started putting her on the plane. And so I flew with her, but then she started flying inter-island. So it's like 50 minutes. And she got to fly inter-island by herself. And then she started at age 12, she started to go over to Honolulu by herself. And then I'd come later. So we actually taught her how to fly and be independent and be with other people. Pick them up at the airport, get them, take care of them, and then I come in later. But it was a fantastic thing. So she got to go on her trip without me.
Nice.
She got to go on her vacation before me.
Maybe that's all Remy really wants. Get me there, mommy.
And she doesn't even want me to go with her. Actually, she doesn't. She has a boyfriend named William at her school. Although if you ask her if it's her boyfriend, she goes, No, we're just friends. But she wants to go on a vacation with William. She didn't actually invite me at all.
Okay, Ashley. Okay, same question goes to you, so you can think of your answers. So 10 words or less, what does it mean to be a conscious parent or to parent a conscious child?
To be present, hopeful, calm, resourceful, loving, and compassionate.
Ooh. Look at her. She did that 9.
Okay.
9. All right. Same to you.
To allow space to develop who you are.
Ooh. See, God. And I think that's the perfect place to end this podcast. That's great. Thank you.
Beautiful conversation.
Cassie, thank you so much. I mean, this is a totally different side, and I love it.
No problem. Thanks, guys, for inviting me and letting me talk about being a mom.
You can tell that's your passion. That's pretty awesome. So, yeah, I guess that wraps us up for today.
Thank you, everyone.
Such a great, great podcast.
Thanks so much.
All right.
Thank you.
We'll see you next week. Thank you for joining us for another amazing episode of Conscious Living here at the Specialty Produce Network. For more information on how to support your lifestyle with the fastest growing resource for conscious families, visit our website at www.centerforconscious.com. That's www.centerforconsciouskids.com. Join us again next week as we get a little bit more conscious and a little bit more centered, and we'll see you then. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you.